And we're live.
And we are live.
166.
Episode 166 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. I'm Dan Nedelko.
Matt Stefanich.
I'm Chad Gillen.
Awesome. Welcome, welcome. While everybody streams on into the room.
Yep.
See what I did there?
Stream on in. I know. It was a busy week before. It's always a busy week before the big game. And definitely some good stuff happening throughout this week.
For sure. So this week on episode 166 of Live at the Hive, we are going to be talking about how to use social listening and customer sentiment analysis to improve your content strategy. That's a heck of a mouthful.
It is, but you know, it's definitely something that we use a lot at the Hive, and it's something that, you know, a lot of the times marketers need to learn a little bit more about when it comes to social listening and customer sentiment, because a lot of the times, you know, focused on getting those metrics down and things, and we need to make sure our ears are open for all forms of communication.
Absolutely. And you know, it's typical of marketers and anybody in communications to really talk a lot about yourself or your product. And it's really important to understand, and it's great for research for content marketing as well. That's another real key. So not only the sentiment, but what is the feeling of the people that are your potential customers? What motivates them? Are they frustrated? Are they happy? Are they questioning? That drives their activity, which should then drive your content marketing strategy. And what we're going to talk about today is, like, so not just sentiments as a happy, you know, neutral or sad, which is kind of the typical scale it's given. There's a lot more under the waterline there that goes into what your customers are thinking about, your prospects are thinking about, what's motivating them. And sometimes people are motivated by frustration, for example. Like if you have a pool supply store, you know, how do I fix my pool pump? My pool pump is clogged. Like that's a frustrated sentiment, but they're also seeking questions and answers. Hey, Chris. Chris says, hi, everyone. First time viewer.
Hey, Chris.
Hey,
hope you're having
thanks for joining.
Good week. Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the show, and hopefully you take something useful away from our 40-ish minutes together.
For sure. Cool. Alrighty. Well, do we want to go through a couple what's new before we kind of dive into this week's what's working?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Cool. Alrighty. So let's start off. You sent this over to us, Dan. It's this AdRef's blog on content marketing. It's a huge kind of comprehensive guide.
Yeah. So Ahrefs is obviously one of the top full-featured SEO and content tools. It's a massive platform, lots of adoption, and they've done a really great job with their content marketing and their strategy around how they approach the art of content marketing. And it goes into, we're not going to go into it in depth, but I ran into it earlier this week, got through about half of it, and I just thought it was really well written. Really puts some monkey bars around where you should be when you're thinking about your content marketing strategy and how to actually roll it out. Everything from the keyword research to the types of content and getting that research and intelligence.
Awesome. And then I think we also have a playbook from Crit in here that we have. It's kind of like an inside look at their playbook, their marketing playbook.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Crit is a startup, and you know, I think the smart startups, and I think any smart business, is really focused on content creation and quality content creation. And what I really liked about this was they're very transparent about how they approach their content marketing strategy and why it's super important. They've broken down their brainstorming content ideas. There's some great lists right there that you just go up a little.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right there. That list there. Asking the questions, you know, what are, so if you go just a smidge. There we go. So in that list, where, you know, what are the most pressing pain points or frustrations? What do they ask during sales calls? That's a great one. What major triggers or decision points do they hit on in their journey to us? What do they ask throughout the design and development process? What parts of working with us routinely challenge or confuse them? And how do they need What do they need to know to make the most out of our work? So you can see that they're really diving deep into that process, and they're not taking it lightly, right? They're not just saying, well, I've got a content team over here, go make us some content. Mm-hmm. If you go down a little bit, there's a really cool strategy. That's it right there. I love this little simple, I don't know if you can blow that up a bit so we can see it, but it's a very simple little flow chart. Asking questions and answering questions, whether you should write about it. So it starts out, did it align with our strategy? Yes or no? Yes, if it does it add tangible value to our customer? If it's no, then don't do it. If it's yes, have we written about this before? That's an important one, because that could be an update or, do we have something new and interesting to say for an update? If they say yes, I think they got something wrong here in their little flow, because it says no, update the old post. Mm-hmm. And lastly, do we have, can you afford the resources to do it? The answer is yes. Then you write about it. And that, I really like that thought process, because I think when there's ideation and backlogging and brainstorming, it's just let's go.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I feel like Mark, it's really fast paced sometimes, especially with a lot of, you know, campaigns and projects and stuff like this being available. Just a really great way to kind of bring you back down and ground you to that, the core marketing values that we use on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is it's all about taking content marketing seriously as a discipline, as opposed to I'm just, you know, slamming out as many blog posts as I can possibly get out the door.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. We have a few more before we go into what's new, just really rapid title kind of insights. So this one, I think one of the bees put this one, it's about, you know, how IKEA is using some digital marketing as well as some other digital strategies to get a little bit more customer insights. So they kind of go through the case study here. Again, the bees are going to be putting these in the chat, so feel free to kind of run through them at your own time.
Awesome. So Chris is actually saying, I'm excited to learn my new e-commerce brand is getting an aesthetic upgrade. So I'm here to learn about the next step for it, which is marketing. Awesome. Well, congratulations, Chris. And one tip for your e-commerce brand is consider yourself a media company and build on your socials quite a bit. And use these content marketing strategy tips to really create lots of content. And and you know, if you have any questions, you can feel free to drop us a note or a comment or a DM, and we'll be happy to help you out a little bit.
For sure. One important one that I just want to highlight before we move on to what's new is Google's announcing. So Google's had a long term, you know, enforcing the price accuracy between their merchant centers and checkouts. So what this means is that say if you have something on the merchant center that's $15, but when you go to checkout, maybe it's switched to like $20 or something like that. You're going to want to be consistent with that and make sure that it's the same price across the board, or else here Google's saying that your account can be suspended.
Yeah, and I think the important thing here is to remember that what you're going to want to be doing is using data feeds directly from your store, so you're not syncing potentially out of date information. So whether you use WooCommerce, Shopify, Magento, every single e-commerce solution has the ability to push your data feed, product data feed, directly into Google Shopping. So you want to make sure you're doing that.
Cool. Alrighty. Well, with that, I think we're good to dive into what's working this week. We have a lot of good stuff. So
yeah.
Without further ado,
let's go into it.
So how we're going to lead off is just kind of talking about how we use our social listening and customer sentiment. So Chad, do you want to kind of lead into this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we all know like social media is a really great way for businesses to be able to communicate with their audience. It's a great two-way platform for us to be able to talk. So it's really good for brand awareness and building that audience engagement. And that's why they're great platforms for understanding social listening and customer sentiment. There's a ton of analytics you can get from these channels. You can see basically how people are reacting. It just keeps on evolving and getting more and more complex. So you can really dig into the analytics and really see how people are responding to your content, which can also, you know, obviously in turn that will help improve your content, because you can kind of see how people are responding to it, and then just kind of tailor your content based off of your findings.
For sure. And there's a few other tools that pull in other things like BuzzSumo, for example, that looks at trending content in addition to social. So we're pulling from all sorts of different sources to really glean insights into what our audience is reacting to. And we'll probably cover our boost posting strategy, which we've pretty much got it down to a little bit of a science. When it works really, really well, and it'll help you just use a small oh boy, here we go, the neurons are not firing.
Yeah, take anymore. A sip of that coffee.
Yeah, I'm going to where you can take a small spend to boost to the content that you understand and watch the organic algorithm take over and go ballistic for you.
Yeah, so. For cool. Sure. Cool. Mm-hmm. Just kind of going off what Chad said, you know, social listening is a mix between, you know, listening to the brands, competitors, different products, and making sure that you kind of track what people are saying and analyze it, right? Make sure what people are saying, you want to add that into your strategy, and also maybe diverting your strategy a bit. Maybe the conversation has changed and things. So.
Yeah. Always be willing to pivot and change your strategy. Don't hold on to your assumptions when you start seeing, these social sentiment metrics, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah,
do you want to dive in a little bit deeper?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're looking at things like engagement, number of mentions, and what we want to do is get beyond those numbers and use a variety of sources to really understand what that sentiment is. And that's what we're really going to be talking about today.
Yeah. And I think this top point here, social listening is not social media monitoring. I think I really agree with that. I think, you know, social media has a really big part in it. But, you know, I think that we have to always take a step back and see what's going on outside of social media as well. Mm-hmm. And using that to our benefit as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the other things too is there are some pretty fancy AI tools like IBM Watson and certain things that you can possibly access. But just as an example, there are several tools that allow you just look at what your audience is engaging with on a tool like Answer the Public, which pulls in question-based searches as well. That is sentiment, right? So it's not just I'm mad, I'm sad, I'm happy, I'm frustrated. There's more nuanced layers to that level. I'm asking questions. I need information. Darn it, I did have another article on how to create a question-based website structure, which is a really cool one. But that is something that we can touch on here when we get to it.
For sure, absolutely. Just some of the ways that we kind of measure this type of sentiment, you know, there's lots of tools that you can use. I know you said IBM Watson before, Monkey Learn is on here. I use Mention, it's not on here, but I've used Mention in the past to kind of track PR sentiment, customer sentiment that way. Lots of great tools that kind of go in depth. So, I mean, feel free to explore them, but we've definitely put some of the top ones that we like up on here.
Yeah, and we're actually going to, I think we've got a feature on Mention as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Chad, do you want to go through this one?
Sure. Yeah. For Facebook is it has a really complex suite of analytics. You can really dig into how people are reacting. Like, it's not just as simple as just liking a post or, you know, just kind of seeing how many people are looking at the post. You can really kind of dig into how they actually feel about your content, which is really great. You can do it the way they have divided up the reactions now. People are just, if they're just clicking on the likes or if they're clicking on the loves or, you know, the laughing or getting angry, it kind of shows what sort of mood that they're feeling towards the post. So it can really help show you how people are kind of responding to your content and your brand, which is really great.
Yeah.
So you can, through like reactions, shares, comments, video views are really good. You can kind of see how long people are watching videos for and how they feel about them.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. I think we've got a Jake Paul feature here somewhere coming up, I believe.
Oh, yeah, the next one. Yeah, right here. Okay, yeah.
So let's just go back up because there's a couple of key points to discuss here. When you look at these metrics and how you break them down, is really creating a ratio between the number of people that were reached and the number of reactions that you're going to get, right? Mm-hmm. So that is an engagement sentiment, right? Are you reaching these people? And are you getting those post clicks as well, right? So in this case, it's interesting. So 1.3 million people were reached. We got 2,100 reactions, but 49,715 post clicks. So there was a physical engagement that those people did, but a lot of them didn't actually react. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're looking at the content. It is definitely an engaging post. Those are pretty decent metrics, especially for you know, where we posted this. Yeah. These are the kinds of things you want to look at, right? Mm-hmm. How many impressions did I have? Well, we got 49,715 post clicks. So that content is engaging to the audience. They want to see that, right?
They're not just scrolling past.
Yeah, exactly. And the number of comments is looking pretty good. And then what I would say, if I was being self-critical about how to improve it, is when you don't get as many reactions necessarily in relation to those number of post clicks, then maybe we want to look at the copy that we're putting into the post, right? Are we being, you know, do we need to increase the amount of positive or negative sentiment? Like, how do we connect and engage with those people? And that's a testing thing.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a little bit about how to kind of look at those metrics. I think a lot of times when people are looking at those metrics, they go, yeah, you know, we got over 1,500 reactions. Well, 2,100, right? But there's a little bit more to that than meets the eye, I guess, like the Transformers before they screwed up the movies.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. We won't talk about that, but at least on this episode. But
I can't watch a Michael Bay movie anymore.
Yeah, it's just a little bit too much.
It's the shaky camera, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know what that is.
We have a
totally
good,
off topic there.
It's all good. We have a good comment from Stacy here. Stacy says that sentiment metrics are a great way to understand what isn't working, so you can take that data and review it, optimize your content, so you're always supporting your audience. I think that's a really good point to highlight, because I feel like a lot of the times as marketers, you know, if we're putting out content that doesn't like create sentiment with our audience, or audience isn't really engaging with it as much as we should, that's sometimes really discouraging for your strategy and things, right? Especially for new marketers. So it's really important to maybe take a step back and see how you can switch that content up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a couple of interesting things about this, and I think one other point for marketers, content marketers, social media marketers, is, you know, don't be afraid to test different mm-hmm. things, and don't be afraid to have posts that do not succeed, right? It's the old, you know, it's the old baseball analogy that if I bat 300 in my baseball career, I'm going to the Hall of Fame most likely, but that means I missed seven out of every 10 pitches that were thrown my way, right? Mm-hmm. And I hit three. So that's very much a similar thing in these cases. So let's look at the Jake Paul post, because I thought there was some interesting insights cool. here.
I think Chris posted something in chat. He had a question where he asks, is there a ratio of post clicks to views that tells you the promotion is doing well?
It really depends, because when you have the smaller audience, Chris, your ratios are going to be much higher. As your audience grows, I would tend to suggest tiering it out and deciding what your engagement is. You may want to go back, Chris. We do talk a lot about how to use Facebook audiences and Google remarketing audiences to ensure that you can remarket to anybody, especially on Facebook. If somebody's interacted with your post, you can create a custom audience, and that audience you can then boost content to and boost promotions to. That's a brand building activity. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of smaller audiences, you should be wanting to see like 40 to 50% as you start to grow. And even if you're not looking at the total number of followers, it's the total number of people you reach, because if you boost, you can reach to an audience, right? As that audience gets bigger, the ratios are going to go down, if that makes sense, because it's a larger audience. But if you have a targeted audience, you should be like those last couple of ones that if we can just put that up,
like this one right here.
Yeah, whatever the ratios. This is a good ratio to a highly engaged audience. We've had better, I'm not going to lie, but this one I would categorize in the very good. But I mean, you've got to do a little mathematical comparisons there. Yeah. 49,000 of 1.3 million and 2,300. I would call that moderately good. If you were to double those two numbers, I would see that was a real banger. Mm. You know, and again, I'm not critiquing saying that's not a good post. It's a great post. But, you know, when we're being self-critical and evaluating our performance so we improve, that's really what I'm kind of getting at there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Right on. So going on, we have this Jake Paul.
This one's great.
I feature that I see. Yeah, do you guys want to go through this one?
Yeah. So cool. We actually discussed this, I believe, yesterday, didn't we, Chad?
Yeah.
Sure. So Jake Paul is a famous internet troll. And right now he's trolling boxing and UFC very heavily. And you know, love him or hate him, he's masterful at trolling. He's very annoying and he definitely gets attention. There's no doubt about it. We're not talking about his methodologies here, but because he's kind of like in the, you know, if you're talking about the WWE, he plays like the heel, right? He's like the bad guy. And the interesting thing about this post was the number of reactions that it got, right? Versus the average video watch time of 4 seconds. And Chad, what does that tell us?
Nobody likes Jake Paul, but everybody is very, very engaged with the content. So it really shows that people are like really interested, very passionate about the topic. I think it's like you get into boxing and combat sports. I don't think a lot of people in that sort in that audience like Jake Paul very much. So.
Yeah, and I think too, you can see from the total reactions, there's almost twice as much ha-has versus likes, right? So it kind of shows you that real MMA fans, when they hear that Jake Paul's talking about something, they're not really giving him much credit into seeing like what he's talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So for 4 seconds, it's more of a joke than anything.
That's the average, and you can actually dig into the minutes viewed, right? Yeah. And get a better idea of what the watch time was. It certainly was. Right, the 10-second video views were 15,000, total of almost 12,000 minutes viewed. But the average video watch time means that a lot of people didn't even need to watch this in order to react to it, which is, I see Jake Paul, I read that, he's an idiot. Or I love him. Like, I mean, but you didn't need to watch the whole video to get that, to get through that. That's that kind of reaction. So look, when you're looking to engage with your audience, and if we can distill what, so this, I mean, you call it a split sentiment, right? Let me see here. Yeah, so in the post content, you know, the comment is, I don't think he understands what the MMA stands for. What MMA stands for, that's getting the like, that's getting the haha, right?
This is quote.
and Jake Paul is a triggering figure, so he gets your you gain attention on your social, and this is using that sentiment to really kind of grab that attention. And so that's a good strategy to adopt, especially for businesses, to, you know, stop just posting bland, dry, neutral content that doesn't that just gets kind of washed away in the news feeds of whatever social platform you're on.
Absolutely. For sure. Already kind of going on here. One of the tools that the bees use for their social analytics is Iconosquare. And it gives you quite a bit in-depth analytics, but also some analytics that I know some platforms have troubles with, the API sometimes gathering the metrics and things, but we've had a pretty solid experience with Iconosquare. So do you want to kind of talk about a little bit about the statistics on Instagram that we like using on Iconosquare?
Chad, I think you would agree, Instagram's built-in native analytics stink.
Oh yeah,
that's to say the least.
I've used it's pretty terrible. Iconosquare is great. One of the really good things I really like about Iconosquare too is that you can even generate reports that are already visually put together. So nice visual graphs and everything with all the statistics. It's pretty fantastic, especially in comparison to Instagram's native.
And it gives you histories. It gives you the ability to see your top trending posts. You can listen. They have a thing that's Tailwind, I believe, has tribes. There's a lot of great features. If you're building up your Instagram, which for e-commerce, I would definitely suggest that's a great channel, and TikTok, is that you want to be able to look at historically what's working well. And that's not easy to do in the Instagram app. TikTok's not much better. By just using Instagram built-in analytics on a mobile device, you're probably going to be making a lot of assumptions that may not be entirely accurate. And what Iconosquare does is it pulls it in, creates that history for you. So the longer that you're using it, the better that data gets. And yeah, to Chad's point, it's beautifully rendered. So you can include these in report updates in a few clicks, really.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. we can see here one of the posts examples that we have here is this Conor McGregor and Mayweather post, and how it kind of goes through all of the analytics from the post, you know, from the engagement rate, reach what rate, how many saves the post got to. That's really kind of like an underrated metric that a lot of people kind of miss out on are the saves, right? And maybe not every post is relevant to save, but definitely some good content. We've seen that work where the saves are in, you know, a couple thousands, really, right? So it just depends what type of content you're posting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is another great example of obviously, you know, Conor McGregor and Mayweather, part of this big current drama in the sports world and sports entertainment, really. And you can see that, you know, the level of engagement rate is good. The likes are a very much a vanity metric, but you know, one of the things is consistently getting those likes, building your audience, right? So yes, a like is a vanity metric in and of itself, but I would call it kind of a co-metric with the other deeper metrics. You use them together to get a bigger picture idea of what's actually going on. So, you know, you want to consistently be building these, having those posts, and if you're boosting these posts or promoting them, attach it to the audiences so people will see you over and over again.
Yvonne has something here that you can go over.
Yeah, Instagram needs to step up its game in terms of analytics. I can go back 7 days, not nearly enough. Yeah, tools like Iconosquare are fantastic for getting the job done. It's true. If you're in marketing and you don't have an Instagram analytics tool, I feel like you're hand waving a lot.
Yep. Absolutely. Next tool that we have here is BuzzSumo. We've used BuzzSumo quite a bit, and even in the early days when it didn't actually look like this, I remember using it. But it's a great way to kind of dive in, either early in your strategy or late in your strategy, to kind of find out, you know, what people are engaging with. But also, it's a really great way I like to use for finding journalists and influencers as well.
Yeah, it's so BuzzSumo pulls in web content to see what's trending and what's engaging. And again, as you're building out this multifaceted approach to understanding your customers and the customer sentiment and how that should be guiding you, these are really valuable metrics. One, also to see what content is resonating with your audience, right? Now, you can see there are some there's some pretty big sites on this particular one. It's a good example. You'll get different ideas on one, the type of content, the format of the content, and also, you know, when you dig in, you can really slice and dice your topics and the industry that you're in. And then, you know, you can get away from seeing, you know, CNN for news and New York Times and that kind of thing, and getting more granular and nuanced.
Absolutely. And it's a great way to kind of see where you can start building up some of your relationships with some of these, you know, platforms and journalists, because you can see what their customer sentiment is almost too, right? You can see how people are reacting to their posts and their brands. And then you can kind of see if that's in line with yours, if you can kind of piggyback onto people, or even if you have something to offer them, right?
It's all about, it's all about researching your content. I mean, there's a lot of research that should go into your content. Looking at what your competitors are doing and using their content for inspiration is extremely valid. It's also another great way to understand gap analysis. So where are your competitors not performing well? That's where you can go, right? Calling an audible in football, right? Where you have one play, the quarterback calls an audible, the play changes completely differently, and everybody goes in different directions there.
Absolutely. Oh, here it is, mentions. So I said beforehand that mentions are a really great tool to kind of listen in on what people are saying about your brand, but also kind of grow your business and your brand awareness, right? So it can monitor anything from, you know, tweets, Facebook tweets, radio hits, Facebook news tweets. Articles. Oh, sorry. Well, Facebook, tweets. Yes.
Yeah.
Even podcasts too and stuff, right? It's really in depth. But I highly recommend it. It's really easy to use. It's a great listening tool. And it's definitely a bigger tool, I would say, than some of the other ones that we've posted. But definitely something to add into your arsenal.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing with Mention is, I mean, you can plug in your brand name, especially if you're a larger brand, you'll mm-hmm. see commentary about your brand. Mm-hmm. But what I would suggest is actually understanding the subject matter that your potential audience is interested in mm-hmm. and monitoring those. So you can then use Mention to help monitor what other people are talking about. So, if you've got an e-commerce store focused on, you know, baby apparel and for newborns and toddlers, for example, I would source out a number of those keywords using Mention, run a monitor on that. There's a free level. It's basic, but you know what? It can get the job done. So, you know, and you can upgrade as you start to see value out of it. Mm-hmm. When you start to see what people are talking about, one, you can engage with them. Right. And especially with people that aren't getting much engagement, if you open up to them, very much a Gary Vaynerchuk kind of thing, talk to them about what their problems are, help them solve the problems, and you're going to build a relationship with your new potential customers. Just takes a little bit of work on your part mm-hmm. to be doing that. So that's a great way to use audience insights for Mention and those monitors that you can set up.
Yeah, for sure. And we can kind of see here, you can set up with kind of some keywords, monitoring specific pages as well. They don't even have to be your own page, as well as, you know, some sources in different languages too. If you're in different markets across different regions, it's good to make sure they check out some language boxes over here so you can monitor a little bit further.
Yeah, and your filter sets are really the important part of that setup, right? Because if I just mm-hmm. put in something very vague at the top level, I'm going to get a whole bunch of crap in that feed. The more mm-hmm. specific I can be and the more that I understand my audience and where they're interacting, the more accurate and useful that information will be for you.
Absolutely. Here we have some customer service. So this one's kind of a little bit more kind of general, and I would probably say this one is pretty old school, but I think it still works within social media, right? Finding the networks that you want to listen on, choosing the listening tools, setting up the alarms and notifications, right? The real basic stuff, but at the same time, it's really effective if you set up correctly and kind of take the time to make sure all the pistons are firing.
Yeah, for sure. For any business, one of the most valuable sources of marketing and communications intelligence are your customer service or your customer support or client support teams. They're on the front line. They're talking mm-hmm. to the customers. They're talking to leads. They're sorting out problems. And one of the tools that you can use that we actually use, and it's also got a free version. And Chris, for your e-commerce business, I would suggest it's called Freshdesk. You can use several. There's lots. There's Zendesk and you know, different variations. But having a strong help desk customer support center where you can classify things, tag them, put them into buckets and put them into streams is an incredibly powerful way to really help determine what your marketing and communications can be. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a free version of Freshdesk that's quite capable, especially when you're getting started. Last thing you want to be doing is managing customer requests like directly via emails. It just gets messy, and you can't really distill that data out of just an email inbox really easily.
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes it's good to have a congregated place where you can kind of answer everything at once, right? You're not looking through five different platforms, logging into each one and flipping, right? That's going to take forever. You want a place where it's all congregated and you can do it at one place efficiently, right?
Yeah, it's that would be painful. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Alrighty. Getting close to the end, but next up is kind of the relationship between SEO sentiment and content development. Yeah. So Dan, I'll let you kind of dive into this one here.
I didn't see this slide before. I'll just...
Oh, sorry.
Okay. No. So yeah, no, of course. SEO, you know, I think SEO just gets this very generic rap of you know, create content and keywords on your site. There's a lot of advanced features. What you really want to be able to do is make all of your content, including your reviews, your product descriptions, your schemas on the site, and make them all highly discoverable and well formatted. It's going to let you understand, you know, and you can use SEO to understand what your what your competitors are doing really well by going through all of those elements that you can search and have discoverability about.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, sometimes when we get some new clients, a lot of the times these things aren't really set up correctly and yep. people kind of skim over them. And it's really, you always say to the team that this is the bare bones of the SEO strategy, right? If you can't get this stuff down, it's, you want to make sure that you have this solid before you kind of move on to the next step.
Yeah. Really, so right? for example, if your reviews are there on your site, but they're not properly formatted for rich results for Google, for example, those will not display in search results. If you do, your reviews will show up. That'll have a star rating. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Google will show certain snippets of reviews, which is always a good thing. The other thing I would throw into here is a tool like Answer the Public. Again, there's a free version of Answer the Public. That is a platform that aggregates from several different question and answer platforms. Mm-hmm. And it's a very powerful way to understand what your potential customers are searching for based on key phrases.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the title says, right, you can adjust your content strategy using what Dan just said, right? Making sure that, you know, you're having some of the top keywords in your strategies, right? Being realistic with your keyword goals too. That's really important because I think a lot of the times people sometimes get a bit overzealous with their keyword goals, right? Mm-hmm. You know, engage in the social listening, like we said before, and then using all that data and seeing how you can use it to either propel your message to your customers or even your products, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think really that you could take this and expand it a couple of layers out using all of the things that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, when you're creating your content marketing strategy, you take all of these elements and you know, a lot of times what'll happen, I think our content marketers and when we're creating content are talking about our product doing this, our product does that, our product, us. And that will not be an effective content strategy. It needs to be about the person searching, you solving their problems, their questions, giving them free guides, giving them free advice, giving them a wealth of information that they can then trust and rely upon. They'll come back for more. So what problem is your product solving for those people? And you can, what questions are you answering and what resources do you have? And all of these things really help bolster your inbound marketing strategy and your engagement that you're going to get with people. And look, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations have been built on this type of strategy, HubSpot being probably one of the most obvious, right?
Yes. Yeah. For sure. I mean, whenever I'm looking for, you know, marketing content, tips, blogs, or anything like that, HubSpot's always one of the top results that we get, right? So you can definitely see how they use that strategy to their advantage.
For sure. Cool. You want to go through some of these examples quickly?
Yeah, let's go through them. We still have some time. So for example, some of the content that you can use would be, you know, a top five FAQ, right? A lot of the time, FAQ can really be a great pillar of content on your site.
Mm-hmm.
FAQ videos as well.
The question-based, the one I really like is, I love the idea of a question-based strategy in your information architecture of your site. So it's about humanizing the copy on your site to create a narrative story, right? So you're mm-hmm. talking to that person. You can create these funnels and flows. I love the idea of FAQ videos side by side with the written FAQ. They can be made very simply. They're highly effective. You could publish those onto YouTube, onto your channel. FAQ how to solutions, like on my personal YouTube channel, which I've sadly not maintained very well, but I'm going to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
One of my top videos, which I think has something like 70 or 80,000 views and consistently, is how to identify and solve WordPress plugin conflicts. And I just did it on the fly a few years ago, or no, like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It gets consistent views, and it's a very simple video. It's really just a screencast. So you don't need to have, you know, this insane production quality. If you've got these questions and answers, and if you can put together those videos, could even be, you know, a slide presentation that you're recording and you put together. That's as simple as that can get.
For sure. Absolutely. This is our last one before we conclude. So this one's actually really important. We have this across all of our clients whenever we're doing our social media or any kind of, you know, social listening on their accounts. But, you know, developing this challenge response guide is one of the things that you want to focus on as well. And Chad, do you want to go through this and just talk about why that's important? I know you guys on the social team use that a lot.
Yeah, sure. Well, that way you can kind of keep track of how you've been commenting on the, on a lot of posts and how you've been responding with your audience. And one of the things that really does, it's I find is probably the most important thing, is that it develops that consistent tone and that flow. So then that way people kind of get used to that that voice, and that's essentially, it becomes kind of like your brand sort of thing. And following that guide just makes responding and challenging to negative content a lot easier. Makes it a little bit more seamless and professional. It gives you a bit of a guide. Like, say you have a difficult comment that comes up and you're not sure how to respond to it. You can kind of look back at your challenge response guide and see the history of you know, how that has gone before, and just kind of stick within that framework.
Yeah, sure. And our challenge response guides have a particular format, including tone of voice, content examples, post examples of posts that perform really well. So, you know, if under a couple of circumstances, especially working within a team, what you want to avoid is that your individual voices override the brand voice when they shouldn't, right? I'm not talking about when, like if you've got multiple people, say, doing customer support on one channel, that's different. But you do want to have a consistent voice, you know, if you're on a team and working. It also helps clients understand, feel confident that because there's such a close tie between customer service and social media, people will just go to social media to have customer service questions answered no matter what. It happens all the time in almost every single industry. Not is really. That you're confident that you have a logical flow of how that communication happens, right? It doesn't just, it's not just going to be one-off answers that may be incorrect. There's an escalation process, for example. And we also have, we'll get this together, you know what, and we'll put it up on Marketer Knows next week, is a standard operating procedure for exactly how you communicate with people that are upset and how to get them offline so you can deal with it and then take them back online once the problem's solved.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a
powerful tool.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix between, you know, a social media guide and a PR response guide too, right? So it's kind of a mixture between both, and it's not always bad, right? We have the wins in there as well, what we did during the wins and things. So definitely something that you kind of build up over the lifetime of your social media accounts.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great when you onboard a new team member, right?
Oh,
You can give them the playbook and they can read through it and get a bearing.
It's kind of an update too, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Alrighty. Just to conclude, you know, we talked about why social listening is important, how you're going to add that into your strategy, some of the tools that we use over at The Hive to kind of monitor social listening, but also talking about, you know, where customers kind of put their feelings and where they voice their concerns, right? So whether that be emails, social, blogs, etc.
Yeah, and I think the key takeaway here is that when you're developing a sentiment analysis, you know, there are some tools like Hootsuite has a sentiment and it's, you know, sad, neutral, positive. That's a very thin veneer on actual human sentiment, right? Yes. In order to build up that sentiment, consider it kind of like, it's like it's got a lot of facets, it's like a diamond. You've got to use all of these different channels and then really infer based on that, and sometimes you may be wrong, but that doesn't mean you should quit because you may not be dead on. But you should use all of these different tools to put together a multifaceted approach so it guides your content strategy effectively. Then you're monitoring that content strategy, whether it's social or it's your on-site content and things like that, to adjust and pivot to what you actually see when you get real data coming through. So there you go. And with that, it is Friday at 5:05 p.m.
Yep.
I thought we were pretty close on the timing of this one.
Yeah, and we even had a couple of What's New articles in there at the beginning, too. So definitely filled in some good stuff this week. Yeah.
We got some sweet spots covered. Good stuff.
For sure.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, if you're in the Northeast like we are, enjoy the -20 evenings you're about to see.
Snow. We got quite a bit of snow too. So
well, it feels like -20 outside. I think it's -10 cold Celsius. Today.
It's so windy out, you can feel the house shake. Like it's crazy how windy it is over here right now. So
Yeah,
definitely stay inside today.
or brave it, get out there.
Yeah, that's too, right.
Depends on your personality.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks a lot for joining us for episode 166 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. We will see you next week. Peace.
See you guys.
Peace. Have a good weekend, guys.